Welcome to Rethink, a podcast focused on the future of skilled nursing. I'm Zahida Siddiqui, editor with Skilled Nursing News. Today, I'm excited to have Zach Cattell with us. Zach is the newly appointed president and CEO of Cardon & Associates, a second-generation family-owned company operating 20 senior living communities and affiliated healthcare services throughout Indiana. With a background in healthcare law and public policy, Zach brings more than two decades of leadership experience in long-term care, regulatory strategy, and value-based healthcare innovation. Before we get to my conversation with Zach, I'd like to highlight the Rethink Conference taking place on August 18th through the 20th in Chicago, Illinois. This premier skilled nursing event brings executives together to address trends, challenges, and the future of the nursing home industry. And this year, Rethink will also feature a dedicated track of sessions focused on assisted living. I hope you'll join us. Visit skillednursingnews.com/events to find out more. And now, my conversation with Zach Cattell. Zach, welcome to Rethink. Can you reflect on your company's last year and describe one win that Cardon achieved?
It's hard to focus on just one win from 2024. We had a really good year, ranging from all-time highs on census to stability through leadership transition and also in our hiring focus with nurses that is starting to come through in 2025. We grew too. And those are all great pieces of 2024. You know, focusing though on one thing, we had continued success in our journey in value-based care, value-based programs, value-based payment, VBP. Both for our ACO involvement with particularly Sound LTC and some great achievements that we made with patient care and in cost reductions to the Medicare program, but also in our continued journey with ISNP and figuring how we can be more of a player in controlling our own destiny rather than just a contractor. And we're really proud with the work we did on VBP. And those are just two examples.
Fantastic. And can you describe one big challenge that your company has faced over the course of 2025 so far?
Yeah. You know, we always focus on caring for residents, right? It is the central component of what we do. And it is a joy. It is what gives us all purpose at Cardon. And the business of healthcare is complex and hard, increasingly complex. The biggest challenge we've had in 2025 is Indiana's movement into full Medicaid managed care through a dual integration program. So Medicaid and Medicare coming together through a dual integrated program has really changed how our processes for admission and eligibility and level of care and AR have been implemented by the state and its contractors. We've had to redesign our approach and be more efficient to tackle those challenges. It's a significant undertaking, but we're doing it, and we will do it because the care for our residents depends on it. And that's really been the biggest wrench thrown in the system in the last 9 months plus, but it's persisted here in 2025.
So there's no signs of that Medicaid, managed Medicaid abating. Like I think there was some pushback from especially smaller operators. I recall last year when it was beginning to be implemented, but it doesn't seem like it's going forth. And right.
It's still moving. The issues have impacted large and small. There are even bigger, ostensibly bigger impacts in certain parts of the home and community-based services provider population and their residents that need HCBS because of a wait list that's been implemented. And we do serve home and community-based service residents, enrollees as well, though it's not our primary business. But no, it's not abated. There have been some improvements that the state has worked on with its contracted MCEs, and we've engaged early and often with the managed care entities to attempt improvements in process, but there are still still complications that occur that seem to have been fixed that pop up again later. So we continue to work at it and seek positive resolution and positive process with their partners, because it will be a program that will be with us for some length of time, if not permanently.
Great. And then looking ahead to the rest of 2025, what are your top priorities and goals as CEO?
Yeah. So first and foremost, you know, I just took over as the present CEO just about 8 weeks ago, and referencing some of the work that was done in 2024 into 2025, we're really pleased with the stability and ease with which the transition has occurred. And you know, both our board and my former boss and colleague and mentor Kent Rogers to thank for that easy transition. And from that perspective, one of our top priorities is a full strategic and financial planning process that will frame up our next 5 years. Timely in that we're halfway through to CMS's 2030 accountable care goal. And those next 5 years for us are going to be very important with new leadership and new focus and new vision. So that's one. Chief amongst all, though, will be continued investment in our people and our communities. Cardon has been successful for many, many years, 48 years to be precise, but particularly over the last 2.5 decades because we invest in our people and our communities. We're sought after by residents and their families, by hospital systems and physician groups because we have the best people and wonderful communities in which to care for our residents. And we're going to keep investing in both our people and communities. And lastly, we're going to look how to grow and grow smartly, both in locations, new locations, or adding service lines to our existing locations and across the company. So smart growth is a key priority for us this year and into the future.
Yeah. I mean, turning to investments, do tell us more about how you're reinvesting in your core footprint, and are there plans to expand beyond that?
You know, we're a Hoosier company, Indiana-based company. We operate 20 communities across the state and are eager to grow in the right areas. We're patient and want to make sure that when we make an investment, that it is one that is done with the long view in mind and being sure that we are able to deliver the top quality and care and the expectation that we set for ourselves through those acquisitions or development or additions in service lines. So some examples that we have done just in the last 3 years between adding new assisted living and independent living actively to our campuses, to adding, fully adding our pharmacy, to starting a focused companion care business, and adding nurse practitioners to our workforce that we employ and that provide care to all of our patients in the buildings. Those sorts of growth speak to both footprint, location, but also key service lines that are important to the senior population in Indiana.
And are you looking to downsize anywhere?
Nope. We're very bullish on where we're at. Mm-hmm. You know, not everything is perfect, of course. We are committed to the communities in which we operate. And even when there are bumps in the road, we smartly double down and figure out how to improve, even during rough times. And, that happens from time to time, but we're not looking to downsize or divest at this point.
And then, I know, as you mentioned, Cardone's a family owned company. Does that somehow, impact the model of care? Tell us a little bit about that, the model of care at your company.
Yeah, the model of care that Cardone started with all those years ago really focuses on quality, dignity, and clinical rigor. I think to our founders, Carol and Donna, Carol was an innovative businessman who found his way into the nursing facility sector and really brought quality of life through physical plant innovation, back in the late 60s and early 70s, and more hotel style accommodations than what was in the market, back 40, 50 years ago.
Right.
And Donna really looked at it through the lens of dignity of care at bedside. How were residents treated? What was seen and done? And what would they want? Would they take have care given to them in the buildings where they either worked first and then eventually owned? And those are central to our model of care going forward and have been carried through by their children, our four family members that currently operate and own Cardone. Mm-hmm. So quality, dignity, and clinical rigor. And ultimately, our model of care is person-centered. It's outcomes-driven and grounded in that clinical excellence and compassion. We serve a diverse population as well, not dissimilar to others in the market, but it's short-term rehab to long-term care, assisted living, independent living, memory care, companion care into the community. And we integrate that clinical excellence at every level. We work really hard to make sure that our teams understand that integration and communicate well. And they're not just treating diagnoses, right? They're truly caring for individuals and supporting the families that trust us with that care. Our interdisciplinary teams are critical to that. I mentioned before, nurse practitioners, we have clinical specialists, RNs, and nurse practitioners. Our rehab professionals, our frontline caregivers are all integral to that. And you couple that internal resource and focus with our partnerships externally, our primary care partnerships, medical director partnerships, hospital and specialty. Those communication and embedded principles of clinical excellence are a constant for us. And that's our goal, is to have the highest clinical bedside care at the right moment, whether that be through an attending physician or our nurse practitioners on site, or even telehealth has been a huge component of our successful care, both in the data, but also in ensuring residents get the right care at the right time bedside. And we've adopted, telehealth across our entire company for many years at this point. So, it's rooted in what our founders wanted to see for themselves and for the communities in which they invested. And that's carried through to today's ownership, but also the folks that do the hard work every day in our communities.
And have you been able to bring down systemic healthcare costs? If there are any metrics that you'd like to share, that'd be wonderful.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll share some data and then talk a bit about, four or five ways that data are represented in our operations. So today, our 30-day readmission rate is at 12%. The national average is 25%. The Indiana average is just over 23%. Our length of stay for 2025 is 18 and a half days, which is just over 2-day reduction from last year. And in a particular area that we have developed, and others have too, but it's not across the board within the market, but we operate 4 in-home dialysis units. Mm-hmm. And right now in 2025, our dialysis readmission rate is 14%. Mm-hmm. The national average for outpatient dialysis is 34%. Mm-hmm. So these are a few data points that speak to our investment in not just value-based care partnerships, but real collaboration between our internal and external providers, hospitals and physician specialties, right? Our dialysis partner who provides the care in-home at 4 of our communities. And our performance in readmissions and length of stay, ED visits as well, obviously demonstrates that success. So there are key areas between different ACO products or different ACO opportunities and our ISNP experience, both with ongoing partners. We operate with 2 different ISNP partners still within our communities, and it's going very well. So for example, within the ACO environment, mm-hmm. by improving that coordination and ensuring that our patients have the appropriate outpatient services and those in-house dialysis treatments, right, we're able to reduce ED usage tremendously. Mm-hmm. We have advanced care planning and palliative care discussions way up front to make sure that they align with patient and family goals. And that reduces cost of care, right? When decision-making is what the patient wants, and you know it ahead of time, you can act on that with increasing quality and decreasing spend. You know, each of these ACO partnerships and special needs plans models of care lend themselves to and are driven by patient-centered decision-making and support from the families for those residents who are lucky enough to have families involved in their lives. And that quality focus on the resident is key to those successful metrics. It is true that if you focus on doing the right thing for the resident, everything falls in place. I know that sounds simple and it gets batted around, but we're seeing it real time. Mm-hmm. When we talk about hospital collaborations as well, we are early discharge planning, not just certainly on day one, but even before day one in many circumstances. And we're making sure that the goals of the patient are met within the timeframes that are set or objectives, right, for length of stay. Mm-hmm. And also making sure that when we're discharging, those resource coordination efforts happen also early and make sure that we're successful with that. That mm-hmm. discharge back to home when we talk about our short stay residents. Mm-hmm. So, you know, these principles are known across our profession, and it takes a lot of effort to make sure that you get consistent process and practice with, you know, again, early and proactive discharge planning, mm-hmm. Identifying opportunities for transitions of care to lower cost settings, right? How long is skilled care necessary, and finding the appropriate assisted living or community-based transition point. Mm-hmm. Strong interdisciplinary team coordination across the board, right? Therapy, social services, clinical, up to obviously the executive directors at each of our campuses. Social workers and transitional care nursing is also very important, particularly those where they are employed by our ACO partners. So communicating and including that as part of our interdisciplinary collaboration is key. Post-discharge follow-up and follow-up calls from call centers and ongoing communication with home health agencies is critical to that as well. So those elements are put in practice by us. You know, the last piece just to emphasize is our in-house dialysis integration, and it really is remarkable to see that readmission rate be so low compared to what happens at the outpatient setting. Understandably, to some extent, you know, you have to get transportation from your home to a dialysis center, right? That can be disrupted. Mm-hmm. You may not have optimal discharge instruction or adherence. And when you can help a resident on site with in-home dialysis at their home in our centers, it is clear that it's been better from a readmission perspective and a quality perspective. The residents seem very satisfied with that. And making sure that that is part of the goal is that that's what the resident wants, but it also feeds into lowering the total cost of care for various payers in the market. So we're really proud of those results, and we're going to continue to focus not only on those, but finding new ways to be proactive and deliver solutions to lowering total cost of care while maintaining resident-centered decision-making.
So there, you feel like there's still room for improvement when it comes to metrics on reduced hospitalizations, et cetera, you know?
These are pretty good metrics, right? Those are the, I mean, we're always looking for areas of improvement. I was actually looking at some data today, and we organize our company based on regions. And one of the reports I was reading this last month in May, that region had an 8% readmission rate, right? So it obviously ebbs and flows based on patient need and making sure that that patient gets the right care at the right time, including hospital care. And so we're always watching it. But when we think about improvement, it's going beyond just the ACO or just the I-SNP or just dialysis. You know, what other conditions can we focus on to improve those particular data points? Thinking of CHF or COPD and some initial pilots that we've got going on those diagnoses, and making sure that we can look at data in the aggregate and be really proud with our low readmission rate and making sure the residents are getting clinically appropriate care. But when you maybe unpack certain types of conditions, there are specific areas of improvement. So we will continue to focus on those opportunities as well.
Great, great. Thank you for all those details. And now turning to new service lines, just wondering if you added any new service lines and what your company's strategy is in adding them.
We have, and I mentioned a few before. Within the last 3 years, we've fully integrated a pharmacy within our company to ensure quality delivery and quality service, making sure that we're not missing any opportunity to ensure appropriate medication prescribing, but also that coordination and collaboration between consulting pharmacists and our providers on site has improved as we fully integrated that pharmacy into our company. We are also investing in more nurse practitioners within our company so that it is a partner to and supplements our external relationships or partnerships with physician groups who have their own extenders and nurse practitioner workforce. It's all with the aim of making sure that we can provide a level higher of clinical care, medical care at our centers to provide bedside care in a clinically appropriate way that avoids unnecessary trips to the hospital and allows treatment in place, again, when it's clinically appropriate. It's an investment, right? And it takes effort to coordinate that resource. And we're really happy with how things are turning out within those investments. In addition, I mentioned too, companion care. We have residents both in our assisted living and independent living communities that might need some additional assistance. But we also see folks who we care for, obviously, that discharge to home and may need a few extra days of care. Or, you know, again, companion care is not skilled care, but coordinating and helping that individual get back into their home, particularly if family's not available with certain ADLs. and just getting groceries arranged and housekeeping services and just getting them comfortable at home and being able to coordinate back with the team if there are any issues that skilled or medical care is necessary for. So we're really thrilled with how companion care is shaping up too, and we're looking to grow that service as we look forward in the next couple of years.
That's really thoughtful. I think that's a really thoughtful move. I wonder if it's kind of a growing trend or something that's been out there with SNFs companion care. Good to hear about it. And then turning to workforce, how are staffing pressures shaping up for 2025? Seems like they're easing a little bit, right?
It depends. Mm-hmm. You know, we are seeing good improvement in our CNA workforce. And we are, as overall within our entire workforce, we've added 125 new team members this year as compared to 113 at the same time. And that's apples to apples. We did acquire a new community last year. So if you add that to the mix, it's even larger growth from a team member perspective. But mm-hmm. on the clinical side, CNA workforce has been better. And RN is slightly better, but we still, like many, if not all, mm-hmm. Senior living communities and to some extent all of healthcare, need more nursing. And, we're working on it and doing as much as we can, both with, academic partners and ensuring that we're available for rotations and training, mm-hmm. but also being aggressive in the marketplace with talent acquisition. So, mm-hmm.
yeah.
It's an interesting conundrum. We know so many folks need care, and we're looking for more workforce to help provide it. And we're very diligent in doing so. So we have seen some improvement for sure, but there's still a great need. And we're working very hard to address those staffing needs in every market that we operate.
And I believe your The agency use has consistently been declining over the last year, and mm-hmm. I wonder what it is like right now. Has it reached zero yet?
Not yet. It's zero in 16 of our 20 communities. So that's helpful for consistency mm-hmm. and morale. But we still have some agency use, and mm-hmm. you know, Cardon never used agency in its history until the pandemic. So it's a reality that we've been living with for the last 5 years or so. But we're working hard on that. And we have reduced our agency use. And there have been a couple of agencies that have been really helpful to work with, even though it's from a cost perspective and consistency perspective, sometimes not always the best dynamic. We are working well as we need to ensure that we've got caregivers to provide, obviously, mm-hmm. necessary services to our residents. So mm-hmm. we're working hard to get down to zero mm-hmm. again. And then the next quarter, if it goes well, the way we are seeing some trends, I think we'll be closer at that point.
Mm-hmm. And turning to workforce-related initiatives, any ones that you want to highlight? I know there are a number of them, and at the recent conference that we were all at, Amy Haig spoke about the loans and all of that help with the career laddering at Cardon. But yeah, any workforce-related issues or initiatives that you want to highlight?
We really focus a lot on culture, in addition to what you mentioned from prior presentations on traditional workforce development tools of loan repayment or loan assistance and career ladder opportunities. Our culture programming is something that we're very proud of. And we have two different leadership programs, one that focuses on frontline or first time managers, the Leadership Acceleration Program, LEAP. And there are four modules that have been developed in house by our leadership and development team, who are skilled and trained educators. And we go from those initial skill building management techniques to coaching, to mentorship training. And it's been really a great program to see grow. And we've gotten great feedback from those who have gone through it. More than nearly 150 so far since launching just a couple of years ago. Another is our Cardon Leadership Academy that we're in our fifth cohort of. And these are more senior folks within the company that are identified by their colleagues that can take the next step within their leadership journey within Cardon. And there are a number of elements to that program that are successful and driven really by demand. Our leaders are asking for more leadership training, which is remarkable. There are other programs that range from how we're using technology to track personal development plans and bringing financial wellness programming to our associates. And also using different data tools from the predictive index to the Kirkpatrick model on analyzing data that can guide our future program decisions. And lastly, kind of more traditionally, we've developed partnerships just in this last 8 to 12 months with three new high schools and career centers, and really focusing on not just the CNA development, but that career discussion at an early point in time, and introducing skilled nursing as a professional opportunity to students who are interested in healthcare. So we're going forward as fast as we can in all of these areas, and are really excited about the future.
Great. And then turning to Medicare Advantage, we've been hearing about some rising rates or payment rates from Medicare Advantage, but there's still concern that these are still low, you know, not the payment is not where operators would like it to be. You know, what would you say about, in general, dealing with Medicare Advantage, including operational pain from increased paperwork, audits, appeals, that kind of thing? And is your company feeling that pain?
Cardon was an early adopter of Medicare Advantage and saw that it was a system that residents or you know, patients in the community liked. And we started early to partner with Medicare Advantage plans to try to find, you know, win-win-wins. What's good for the resident, what works for the provider, and what works for the plan. It's not always easy, but that's our approach. Yes, things can be difficult, and paperwork and audits and appeals are all part of that. But we do try to approach it from a partnership perspective, and we want to work more closely with MA plans to continue that triple win mentality. And you know, some of that work is on us as well. It's not just the plans where we need to bring ideas to the table, but the plans need to be open to change, and that sometimes is hard for really large health plans that for their own operations are looking for some consistency and homogeneity, right? So one-off systems in Indiana or any state are difficult sometimes to do. But I think that's what's going to be required for successful operations and those triple wins in the future. So we're looking for those opportunities. And while it can be difficult, it's a reality of the payment system in which we operate. And we're going to continue to try to have a positive outlook on it.
Great. And then how have surveys been going for your company? Any concerns in that area?
Another key part of Cardon, we take this seriously and have had a disciplined process for many years to being survey ready all year round, not just during the window. And we have an internal process that works really well and results in typically 50% fewer citations than the state averages. You know, kind of knock on wood there a little bit, but that's really not a mistake. You know, our teams are amazing, and they are not only good at taking care of residents day to day, but making sure that our regulatory partners have the data they need, right, to see our compliance with survey and certification requirements. So we We know that this is a difficult regulatory environment, and we will continue to perform as best we can within it. Mm-hmm.
The changes, I guess, to the survey process, that hasn't it really impacted, I'm guessing, Cardon too much? Just a thought on that, if you want to add anything.
Well, I mean, there's always, you know, there's new requirements that we are learning, and we haven't found any particular trouble from them yet. We're learning alongside everybody else, but we tackle those early on. And so, no, there hasn't been any significant negative experience that we have had. Mm-hmm. We haven't had an opportunity to participate in the new survey process. Mm-hmm. The pilots that are rolling out, and would look forward to that, because our regulatory history would suggest that we may not need to be surveyed as often. But we haven't had that experience yet in Indiana, at least with Cardon.
Right. Hence, you're not impacted by the delays that sometimes operators, also in other regions of the country, are reporting on. So,
no, Indiana's done pretty well over the years, honestly. I mean, certainly out of COVID, there were delays, and that was kind of across the board. But the Indiana Department of Health has caught up, I think, pretty well. And over the last couple of years, our surveys have been hitting the windows, and complaint investigations are on time, and Indiana does a nice job, I think, for their responsibility. Mm-hmm. And again, we do the best we can to ensure that we have all the information that our survey partners need to assess our compliance.
Mm-hmm. Great. That sounds like a rarity from what I've heard, but good to know that one state here is on top of the survey process now.
You gotta, it's a complex and difficult business. If everything's on fire or negative, it's going to be hard to survive very long. So not everything's perfect, but we do the best we can to make sure we keep moving forward.
Mm-hmm. Well, we've come to our last question, and it's related to our podcast. This podcast is called Rethink. What's something that you think leaders in the nursing home SNF sector need to rethink? It could be anything.
It would be easy to say technology, right? It's almost remiss not to say AI somewhere. I haven't said it yet until now, but that's not what I'm going to land on. We are halfway to CMS's value-based arrangement goal, right? Where every enrollee, every life that the CMS payment system reaches has an accountable care or value-based arrangement. Mm-hmm. And, you know, doing that alone is daunting. Even an organization like Cardon that's embraced, you know, value-based structures early, and continues to look forward to that. And so the rethink component is partnerships. Creating partnerships are not new, mm-hmm. Certainly within healthcare, and they're not necessarily new in long-term care, but they're not necessarily as ubiquitous as, say, maybe hospital systems. And, you know, we have specific things that we can point to in Indiana and within Cardon, within Hoosier Senior Care Alliance, and our work towards ISNP programming, but those are foundational to more partnerships in the future. So finding health system opportunities for risk sharing and specialty care programming through partnership is the rethink that I would leave you with.
Well, thank you so much, Zach, for joining us. This was fantastic. I really enjoyed our talk, and it was a pleasure. That does it for this podcast of Rethink. I'd like to remind listeners that our Rethink conference is taking place on August 18th through 20th in Chicago, Illinois. This premier skilled nursing event brings executives together to address challenges, trends, and the future of the nursing home industry. And this year, Rethink will also feature a dedicated track of sessions focused on assisted living. Join skilled nursing, therapy, health system, post-acute care executives, investors, and professionals for a one-of-a-kind event. Visit skillednursingnews.com/events to learn more. Until next time, thanks for listening.